All right, guys, Office Hours is live here. It's Friday, June 28th. Welcome to the show. Filling in for Andrew here once again. My name's Jordan. I'm the head coach here at SaberSim. We've got a few things to talk about here today. We've done some pro videos recently about some new strategies around the contest sims. There's been a lot of excitement around, and I wanted to address some of those questions here at the start of the show. As always, the purpose of the show is to be open Q&A. So if you have questions for me that you'd like me to answer, you can fire them away into the Office Hours channel in Discord or into the YouTube chat. We'll get to questions in roughly the order that they come in. But I definitely want to start talking about some of this contest sim stuff that we've been talking about in the pro videos recently here. I do want to mention right off the bat a couple small things. So first of all, if you haven't seen those videos, they are in the pro channel or the pro videos channel in Discord. That is a perk of being on either the SaberSim Pro or the Ultimate plan. You get access to that premium content. A lot of times we do go kind of deeper into concepts, talk about maybe some more advanced stuff, and sometimes some more, what I would say, experimental strategies we talk about in those videos. And what I'm going to kind of talk about here today and answer some of the questions on this today is definitely in that more experimental camp. The reason there are not tutorials about these self-sims as we've been talking about them, and I'll show them here in a little bit in the app. But the reason there are not tutorials on the SaberSim documentation of how to do this yet is because we're kind of have just started talking about this. Like, this has kind of organically come out of conversations that I've had with Matt and with Chris in these pro videos where we've been experimenting with this stuff. This isn't something where if you aren't doing this, you're using the app wrong by any means. That's not what this is. This is kind of just something that, you know, I think a few of us on the team have started experimenting with and playing with in the past couple weeks. We've all found different reasons to kind of like this strategy here, and we've been using it here. So I do want to start this here by talking about kind of this strategy, this self-sim idea, why I like it, and be a little more intentional with actually showing how you would go about setting this up and then using it in your process. But prefacing all of that by saying that, like, this is still something I'm kind of playing with, figuring out. This is something that Matt and Chris are also playing with and figuring out. And if you want to play around with it on your own, in your own process, and kind of join us on that journey, that's great. But I'm not going to necessarily have all the answers to everything about this yet, because we're still figuring it out. And it's, again, very much not like, this is not core SaberSim process necessarily here. This is not like SaberSim 101 kind of stuff. This is kind of more experimental stuff that we've all been playing with here recently. So, but that's where I want to start, because there were a lot of questions that hit our inbox this morning as people watched those videos, as people have been engaging with that content. And I want to talk about some of this stuff here. So let's get a build fired up here first for the baseball main slate tonight. We'll just kind of get the process started of what this would look like if I were actually building right now. So we'll assume that this is for like a large field 150 max tournament and build some lineups. This will take a second to build, and then we'll get some contest sims configured. But while this is building, I guess what I'll kind of start to define some terms and talk about what this actually looks like here. So the terms that we've been throwing around are this idea of like a real sim, which is a contest sim as you have probably been running it if you've been using contest sims, right? It is taking this pool of lineups that we're building right now, right? We're building 5,000 lineups. Each one of these is the best possible GBP lineup for a given way that the slate could play out, like the highest scoring possible lineup that you could have built in 5,000 different iterations of this slate. When you run a contest sim, you are taking what we expect to be the field in your contest, and you're taking each one of these lineups, plugging it into that hypothetical field, using the payout structure that the contest that you're playing has, and then replaying the slate out 100,000 times. And we calculate ROI, return on investment, of your entry fee there, and see, like, does this lineup make money on average when you are playing that particular contest, right? So that's kind of that's the point of a contest sim. And when we're talking about, I've been using the term real sim in some of these pro videos. That's really what I'm referring to here. So for example, if we did this here, right, and let's say that this was for wow, there are a lot of weird contests here with these micro milli max mini maxes going on. Let's say we took this one here, right? So this is, I think, the $3.150 max, right? And we're taking, I guess in this case, it would kind of be like a low stakes MME field. So this is taking, if we set up this contest sim, it takes each lineup in our 5,000, it plugs it into what we anticipate this contest looking like and the payout structure and this set of field lineups. And then it simulates out and each lineup gets played out into that contest 100,000 times. We see how it performs. The self sim idea that we've kind of been playing around with here is similar. It's actually almost identical, but instead of taking the expected field from our pre-generated fields here, you are setting the field lineup to the build itself. So instead of saying using the SaberSim fields of what we think the contest is going to look like, you're now using these 5,000 lineups. So you're not treating it as a 31,000 lineup contest anymore. You're treating it as a 5,000 lineup contest here with this payout structure, and you're using these field lineups. So if we kind of configure that now and run another contest sim. So I think the first question is why would you ever want to do that? Like, why have we started to play with that? At a baseline level, I think the simplest way to understand it is there is variance in what the actual field ends up playing. So if we change the ownership projections here to low stakes MME, these ownership projections now are how often players are showing up, the percentage of lineups in this set of field lineups, this low stakes MME, how often they're showing up in those field lineups, right? The pool exposure here, which is the percentage of time that player is showing up in your pool here, this is a different number. These numbers are, trying to think about the right way to explain this here. The pool you have built here is almost a hypothetical, different, plausible way that the field might play, right? SaberSim, big SaberSim, right? We think Logan Gilbert is going to be in 28% of lineups in this contest tonight. But when you build lineups on SaberSim, you get this 5,000 lineup pool. He's in 17%. So we have this, there is some variance in that 28.27 number here. And the build, the base build, the self-sim build here, I would say is kind of encouraging us maybe to take the under on 28.27, right? So when we simulate these lineups against itself, you are accounting for the fact that, well, there is some variance in the actual ownership you're going to get. And this set of lineups that we have in our actual build is a plausible different set of field lineups of what could actually happen on this slate. This has been expanded, not necessarily expanded, but Matt and I talked about expanding this here and creating a bunch of different fields where you're accounting for a whole bunch of different variants of what might actually happen. So if we kind of look down the list here, right, we have a SaberSim field for the flagship tournament where we expect Logan Gilbert to be 31.74% owned. In the flagship 20 max, we expect him to be 33. In the flagship single entry, 35. In the high stakes MME stuff, 36. In the high stakes 20 max, 41. In the high stakes single entry, 48. There are all of these different fields where we're expecting these different ownership projections. And if you actually think about what is possible here, there is a range of outcomes of what his actual final ownership is going to be. And if he comes in at 15% owned or something like that, he's very likely a player that you would want to be over the field on. If he comes in at a much higher ownership, maybe you would want to be under the field on him. And if we're saying maybe on average across all of these, he's somewhere between 27 and 33% owned, right? Like, it becomes hard to know exactly how much exposure for the contest sim, it becomes hard for the contest sim to solve this and figure out exactly how much exposure to get to these players because of that variance. So as you introduce additional fields to run contest sims against, you start to navigate some of that variance by protecting yourself, right? if we only run a contest sim and say that on just the low stakes MME, what we are basically saying is we are totally confident that Logan Gilbert's ownership projection is going to be 28.27. And the optimal way to navigate that exact situation is to play 14.7% in our 150. But if we introduce other additional contest sims against different fields, we are saying, well, what is the, like, what if is a lineup still profitable if he is 31.74% owned? Is it still profitable if he's 33% owned? Is it still profitable if he's 36% owned? Is it still profitable in against the self sim if he's 17% owned? That's kind of the idea of running these additional contest sims, is it starts to, it is a way of accounting for the variance in the ownership projection. We account for the variance in the player projections using play-by-play game simulations, right? If you've watched almost any video I've ever put up on the YouTube channel, or if you've attended office hours before, you're probably already familiar with that concept. And I don't know what's going on. I feel like there's maybe an issue with our player distributions, because I've been having a hard time getting them to load lately. But here, what will work, the percentiles will work here, right? These player percentiles help describe the range of possible outcomes for what a player's fantasy point projections are, right? So when we say Logan Gilbert is projected for 18.58 fantasy points, that's just a descriptive average of his average outcomes, but we're pulling from the full range of possible outcomes when we create lineups using the play-by-play game simulations. With ownership, we don't do that in a direct way, right? If you set a player, if you set the field lineups to 28.27%, we are saying Logan Gilbert is in 28.27% of the field, and in every contest simulation we run, he is in 28.27% of the field. So creating these multiple contest sims using these different field lineups, you start to account for a little bit of variance there. You start to have kind of created a range of outcomes where you're saying he's probably going to be between, you know, say at the very low end in our self sim, 17%, to at the very high end, 45%. And now we're simulating all of these lineups against that. We're simulating all these lineups against all of these different contest sims. So that's kind of the theory. That's at least the way I am thinking about this theory here, is you're running these different contest sims to account for some natural variance there. I want to show one thing that I think illustrates this point really well, and then I'll actually run through and talk about how I've been personally doing this so far. And if I have completely lost you and you have questions, put them in the chat for me, because I'm trying to explain this as intentionally and as clearly as possible here. So if I'm not, please put a question in the chat. I see some questions in chat already about some other stuff. We'll talk about that here shortly. But put questions in chat about this if you have them. So let me show you, I think the easiest way to illustrate this of how this kind of actually tends to work is by looking at your stack exposure. So by default, with the real sim, as I've been calling it, with the contest sim against the Saber sim expected fields, with no adjustments for diversification, no changes to min uniques or anything like that, we are very heavily exposed to the Twins, who have a 3.8% run total, Colorado 4.4, Detroit 4.7, right? We're saying these are leverage opportunities on relatively low-owned stacks that we should get exposure to. And if we go and look at the ownership projections for these teams, and we look at our exposures, and we make sure I have the right ownership field selected still here, you can kind of see why, right? So the reason we're getting so many Twins is because we expect them to be like 0.25% owned, right? We are getting Rockies because presumably they're also very low owned, right? Yeah, like anywhere from like 3 to 5% exposure to the ownership for the Rockies, right? So the contest sim, the real sim, is saying if these players come in this low owned, we should slam them. Well, when we change to the self sim and we go back and we look at our stacks, now what happens? Detroit is now our highest owned stack, then Kansas City, then the Angels. And if we go and look for Colorado and Minnesota, they've come down quite a bit. Colorado, we're at 7% now. And Minnesota, we are at, where are they? 3%, right? Well, why did that happen? Because in the self sim, if we look at Colorado and Minnesota, so Colorado and Minnesota, their ownership projections in the self-sim, right, in this pool that we're using, are actually, for Minnesota, you know, about 1% to 3%. And that really gets at the core of what this is saying. Because what we just saw is that if Minnesota hitters are 0.25% owned tonight, then we want to slam them. If they are 3% owned, 2% to 3% owned tonight, then we want to almost fade them, play very little. Similar to Colorado, if they are 2% owned, we're slamming. If they are 5% to 8% owned, we're basically even with the field. So you have this thing where at very low ownership projections, there's a lot of fragility to those ownership projections in terms of what the optimal thing to do is. So it becomes very important to understand the possible range of outcomes of those ownership projections, right? Where I started with Logan Gilbert actually isn't even the best example, because you're probably going to find that whether his ownership comes in at, I don't even remember what we were looking at, 27% to 35% will not affect Logan Gilbert lineups very much. But the difference between the Twins with the 3.7% run total coming in at 0.25% owned versus 2.5% to 3%, you get a very different answer when you run the contest sim. So it's very important for us to be aware of that variance in our portfolio. So that's kind of that. I think looking at how your stack exposure changes when you flip between these two is very, very important. So let's actually talk about what I've been doing and how to actually configure this. So if this was actually my build, and again, this is where we're getting into, this is not the answers to the test. This is not me saying this is what everyone should be doing. This is the right way to build. This is what I have been doing. And this is how I have been exploring this and kind of playing with this in my process. Is I have been running my contest sims against as many fields as possible. I want to account for variance as broadly as possible and make sure that the lineups that I'm playing are profitable, you know, against as many plausible fields as I have. In terms of the amount of plausible fields that I have, there is a set number. There is the build that I ran for my lineups and all of the different fields that we have generated before the slate. So when I've been setting this up, I'm going to actually start from scratch here with this. When I've been configuring this, I am creating a contest sim here. And I'm going to skip the payout structure section to speed this up, but this would be the actual contest you're playing. But I've been creating a contest sim using each of these fields because I want to account for the little bit of variance you have between each of these. So I've been going through creating this one, creating all of these. Right. It takes a little bit of time and it can be a little tedious to actually pop all of these in, but I've been creating all of these here. And I actually don't know, honestly, how important it is to get all of these in there. This might be overkill a little bit, but I've been doing it because there is variance here in how owned different players come in these different buckets. And I want to basically simulate my lineups against each of these. It's a little extra slow while I'm streaming, so I apologize. It actually ends up being a little bit faster than this when you're doing it on your own time here. Low stakes MME, low stakes 20 max, low stakes single entry. And what's funny, and this is something that I ended up talking about with Matt on the pro video that he and I did, is this really isn't the way that these buckets were intended to be used, right? What these buckets were intended to be used is if we have a baseline expected ownership for a flagship of how owned a certain player is supposed to be, well, how owned are they going to be in the high stakes GPP, right? That's kind of what high stakes single entry is intended to be, right? If we have a baseline expected ownership, well, what's going to happen at the high stakes single entry? But what I have found messing around with this is that they do a very good job of basically creating a range of outcomes across any contest. So, and then the last one, and this is probably the most important one I think to actually include there, is the self-sim, which is simming your lineups against themselves. So that would be all the contest sims. So they're all configured now, and now I'll run it. And now this is basically going to take each of those 5,000 lineups, plug it into this hypothetical contest we're playing with the default payout structure, but using all of these different fields. So it's going to simulate all of these lineups' performance if all of these different fields were played into separate contests and sim them out 100,000 times. And then what we can do is filter out lineups that were unprofitable in any of them, is the way I've been doing it. So that's what I'll show this next, as soon as the actual data starts to pop up here. And what we're really saying there is maybe a lineup is very grades out as nicely profitable if the low stakes MME field is what you end up playing against. But if that field ends up resembling a little bit more what we would have expected in a medium stakes 20 max, now that lineup might not be as profitable. And we don't know when it actually comes down to what are people actually going to play, which one of those we're going to get. So let's eliminate that lineup and play a lineup that is likely to be profitable in more conditions, right? So the next thing I do, and again, this is a little bit tedious here, is to set a filter to filter out lineups that are not profitable in against all of these different fields. So I've been going through and saying only show lineups where this is greater than here, right? Flagship. So I've been doing this. And if you are asking why is this tedious, why do I have to jump through these hoops? Again, it is because we're off the beaten path a little bit here. This is not when we identify something that we think everyone should be doing in their DFS process. And I've got to stop talking so much when I'm doing these because I'm losing my place. We try to build it into the app and automate it and make it as easy as possible. This is kind of new. This is kind of hot off the press here. So we have to do some manual work to set this up. Did I do that one already? No. So what we're doing is we're saying only show lineups that were profitable against every plausible field that we have at our disposal to use. And the last one is the self-sim build. Okay. And this is going to cut out a pretty big chunk of our pool, right? But now we have 1305 lineups that were profitable against every possible field that we could play against. And what I've been doing, and this is one thing that I think whether you talk to Chris or you talk to me or you talk to Matt, we disagree a little bit on. I have been preferring to ultimately sort using the self-sim build, because what I find is that that leads to a very balanced exposure in your pool. You get exposures to players that are, I would say, safer. They're more kind of balanced. They're less exploitative. And that resembles how I like to play as a player, right? So you'll often see if you look at the highest projected teams, like you're getting exposure up here. If you flip this instead and maybe sorted your last round by flagship MME, some of these exposures drop a little bit. Your exposures to some of these less, you start to see that Twins exposure pop up a little bit more, right? You start to see that Colorado exposure pop up a little bit more. So you're playing a little bit more naturally exploitative. I like to play a little bit more balanced, so I ultimately end up sorting here. John says, late to the party, where did that contest MROI come from that you're sorting by? One, if you are just joining now and you are like, what is this guy talking about? What is happening? I would go back to the start of the stream and watch and kind of catch up back up to us, because there's a lot of necessary context here. We're basically talking about kind of a more experimental way to use the contest sims to account for ownership variance, the uncertainty of how owned a player is actually going to be in your field lineups. But there's been about, how long we've been going? 23 minutes already. There's about 23 minutes of context necessary, I think, to understand exactly where we are at this point in the process. So feel free to stick around and kind of follow up with to keep watching here live, but I would at least go back and watch that first 20 minutes if you're a little lost here. Specifically, the contest sim ROI that you saw up here a second ago that has since disappeared, that is kind of just a weird visual. I don't want to say it's a bug. It is how an ROI is displayed if you run a contest sim and then delete the settings that were used for that contest sim. It will just say contest sim ROI. But anyway, back to the regularly scheduled programming here. So this is now kind of how this would be my base setup for the build. From here, I would start to do things that I tend to do, like diversify with min uniques. Normally, what I like to do with the min uniques is to look for the maximum value, whatever that max is. So the max that I can actually get to while still getting 150 lineups here is at 6. So I would probably come down to one or two less than that. I would probably settle in at either four or five min uniques, right? Probably four. I've just found myself liking four min uniques this baseball season. I would do things like review my stack types. What are my stack exposures? What am I comfortable playing? Might go through and eliminate some little less common stacks that I'm not as likely to play on DraftKings, 3-3, 4 with 5 one-offs, the 3-2 with a handful of one-offs. I don't really want to play those, so I'm going to eliminate those, kind of filling in and doing the rest of my lineup. So this would be very close to what I would now play on this slate. Probably would want to take a look at weather. I haven't even looked at the weather for tonight, so I don't know if there's any weather situations, but this is kind of the basic process. And what we have done here at this point, if I could try to summarize kind of the value, is we have accounted for the wide range of player fantasy point outcomes by using the game simulations to build the pool, right? That's level one. We started with that. Baseball's high variance. What's possible is very wide. We used game simulations to account for that variance and built a pool of 5,000 potential candidate lineups that we could say this lineup could be the winner that you need if the slate plays out this way. Then we took each of those lineups and we simulated it in a contest sim using probably 13 or so different fields, trying to account for the variance, the uncertainty in the ownership projection. We said, we want to not only have a lineup, if we're playing a twin stack, we want that lineup to not only be profitable if the twins are 0.25% owned, we also want that lineup to be profitable if they're 3% owned. If we're going to play Colorado stacks, not only do we want that lineup to be profitable if they're 3% owned, we want it to be profitable if they're 8% owned. So by running these contest sims against all of these different fields, we are accounting for that uncertainty in the ownership projection and making sure that for each lineup that we're ultimately going to play, it was profitable. And this is actually a really good way to look at this. Let's change this. For each lineup that we're going to play, let me do this. Because this, I think, will help see this a little bit. Let's put all of these different, oh, this is going to be a little annoying to find. But I'll do it at least for a handful of these. ROI. Let's do this last one. So I'm not going to actually check all of these, right? But basically, every lineup we're playing, we want to make sure that it was profitable against all of these different plausible fields for all of that uncertainty. It's low on stack might come in 5%, might come in 2%, might come in 3%. The chalky pitcher might come in 28% owned. He might be 35% owned. He might be 40% owned. He might be like, there's a range of possible outcomes there. Well, we know that these lineups are all profitable against as many fields as we have at our disposal to work with here. So I've been enjoying doing this. I think it's been helpful. I've liked it in my process. I think it's made my portfolios a little more anti-fragile. I think it's made the ROI in my contest flashback be a little bit higher because the floor of your lineups is higher. It's less likely that you're going to play lineups that run particularly bad against the way ownership shakes out. So it's you're less likely to play unprofitable lineups is actually probably the easiest way to think about this. It's not like your top end lineup, the best possible lineup in your pool, is way better than it would have been otherwise. You just have a little bit more safety and it's less likely to really get blown out by ownership, right? When we ran this originally, if we just ran the one contest sim and sorted and we played 50% twin stacks, you can run really good on those twin stacks, right? If they end up actually coming in 0.25% owned, you're going to have these insanely high leverage stacks. Your sim ROI is probably going to be sky high. And in flashback, it's going to look very positive towards you. But if they don't, if they come in 2.5% owned, it's going to look really bad. A lot of your portfolio is going to look unprofitable because we can see that when they are 3% owned, suddenly it's not so good to play those teams anymore, right? So that's kind of the idea here. You're not unlocking ceiling. You're raising your floor of your portfolio. So with that said, right, part of this is that this is a strategy that I think works right now for a very specific point in time, like where we are in the DFS landscape right now. And I think that is because a lot of people are building and playing and entering lineups into contests using sim tools like SaberSim, but also other tools out there. And these tools are often identifying the same leverage positions. So not to say that everyone's projections are the same and everyone's ownership projections are the same and everybody's going to find the same spots, but a handful of different Sims or even just a handful of different Saber Sim players playing the Twins because that was identified as a leverage spot, or playing the Rockies because that was identified as a leverage spot, right, is going to, there's going to be a little bit of a self-fulfilling prophecy there of the ownership coming in higher than expected, and now suddenly no one got any leverage. But if everybody all of a sudden starts playing very balanced portfolios where everyone's just playing their, you know, optimal 3% exposure to Twin stacks or their 5% exposure to Rocky stacks, and all of a sudden the ownership, the real ownership, actually ends up being a lot lower than expected, then it's going to be in your favor to play a little more exploitatively again. So there is a little bit of a seesaw here. And I think rather than this being like this, and I mentioned this in the video I did with Chris yesterday, rather than this being this like universal truth of the right way to play DFS, I think this is more a way to directly play against the way that many people are playing DFS right now, which I think is leaning a little exploitatively, especially in baseball, because of the way that sim tools tend to find leverage opportunities to exploit. So that is, I guess, now my 31-minute rant about this self-sim, this kind of these ideas that we've been exploring with the contest sims lately. If you are on SaberSim Pro or Ultimate Plans and you have not yet seen the last two pro videos we have done, the one that I did with Matt and the one that I did with Chris just yesterday, I would highly, highly, highly recommend checking those out, because they are, you'll get a couple different perspectives. Matt and Chris think through this a little bit differently than I do. They have different reasons for liking this. I don't want to kind of spill all the beans of those videos either, because that is paywalled content. They have very interesting viewpoints and they do things a little bit differently in regards to this than I do. So definitely check that out. There's also a little bit more context for kind of what's going on behind the scenes and why this could be valuable here. If you are not on the Pro or Ultimate plan, I would consider checking it out to watch those two videos alone. I think they're probably two of the best pro videos we've done here. We've been doing these for at least a year, maybe almost 2 years here of pro-specific, pro and ultimate content. And we have about 40 videos in the catalog. And I think those two might be my two favorite that we've done. So I think they're almost worth checking out, the Pro or the Ultimate subscription, just for a month. You'll get access to the in-app features, obviously, but maybe even for that content alone, really valuable. So Jay said, where are these videos? They are in the Pro Videos channel in Discord. So when you sign up for a Pro or an Ultimate subscription, we'll automatically adjust your permissions in the Discord server. So you'll get a new role. You'll get either a Pro or an Ultimate role. When that happens, you'll unlock the Pro Videos channel, and then you can see the whole catalog of all of those past videos. If you're having any trouble with that, just tag me or just post a message in the support channel. You need the subscription. After you upgrade the subscription, it takes about an hour or so for the Discord bot to run. But if you're having trouble, if you're not seeing the channel, just pop a message in the support channel. We'll get you pointed in the right direction there. So John says, if you're on the pro plan only, how can I use this? Or is this the Sims only? Yeah. So I guess that is a good caveat. So all of this is related to the contest Sims, this particular point. All of this is related to contest Sims, which is an ultimate only feature. So despite the fact that the content is available for Pro Plus, the specific what we're talking about here is related to the contest Sims, which is an ultimate only feature here. So a little bit of a mixed bag there, I guess, unfortunately. I also do think that like this is just a pretty interesting way to think about DFS when you're really, when you're thinking about this ownership uncertainty. Like, I consume an immense amount of DFS content, and I don't want to sound too egotistical here, but I haven't really heard anybody talking about this in this direct of a way before, thinking about the uncertainty of the ownership projections and how to navigate that in your actual process Like, I don't even think people often talk about the uncertainty in a player projection often enough, which is why I spend so much time in our YouTube videos talking about the value of play-by-play sims, in that they let you navigate that. But I certainly haven't heard anybody talk about ownership uncertainty in a procedural way of actually saying, this is how your lineup building and your lineup selection process should be adjusted for ownership uncertainty. I think it's pretty fresh. So, Jay, if you're still in the trial, you should still be able to verify in the Discord. Everything should still work fine. So I would pop, if you're having any issues, any questions, I would just pop a question into that support channel. So, okay. And I need to get caught up on a couple questions here that other folks had here. So John said, was the custom field explained? So we're not really using a true custom field in this process, right? What we are using is we are using every SaberSim pre-generated field plus the one we just built for ourselves. So we're not actually building a custom field, right? Because I think that's very hard, but we're saying we're going to take all of the custom fields that SaberSim already built that we think are possible on this slate, use those, and also toss in our 5,000 lineup build here as well as another plausible field of saying the field that we're playing against in our contest could actually end up resembling this 5,000 lineup pool scaled up to however many lineups, right? So you can actually go see these if you're curious and want to poke around in the contest tab in the bottom left, which you guys can't see because of this configuration here. The bottom left field lineups down here, you can click this and then click any of these. So if you want to actually see what we're saying is the high stakes single entry field, if you were to simulate it against it, you can load that up and it's right here. It will only display 10,000. There are actually 20,000 in here. We have some technical limitations in the app right now to be able to display 20,000 lineups at a time. We haven't totally figured that one out yet, but there is actually 20,000. But this will give you a good sense, a good starting point. This is 1,000 randomly sampled lineups from that 20,000 lineup field. And you can actually go in and poke around here. But we're not building a custom field in this process that I've outlined. We are instead leveraging all of the pre-built fields that are available to us. Okay. Let's go to here real quick. Chuck says, what do you think about simming two default builds against each other? I've done that before to some success. I think that is probably very similar to a self-sim. That's kind of interesting. I don't know. Off the top of my head, I don't know if that adds a ton of additional value. But it probably doesn't hurt anything. I think it's probably very similar to just running the build against itself. The one that does make me remember one other very important point to make is that, like, the point of this, or the point of the self sim, as I've been describing it, is not that running a build against itself, running your field against itself is inherently a good thing in and of itself. It's that using a default SaberSim build as a plausible field is probably decent, is probably pretty good. So the practical takeaway from that is, if you're the type of player where you like to turn a lot of knobs, you make a lot of adjustments, you set a lot of lineup rules, you limit your pool before build, maybe you're changing team totals, you're setting min and max exposures, I wouldn't run that build against itself, right? What I would do instead is start with just a build where you didn't make any changes. You just built on totally default settings and call that something like base build, and use this as one of your fields in one of your contest sims that you run on the actual build that you're using to fill your lineups, right? So let's say this is base build and then this is build two. And in build two, right, I'm going crazy. I'm changing all this stuff. I'm playing like very specific stacks. I'm doing this. I'm making adjustments to a bunch of team totals. I'm doing all of this different stuff. I'm adjusting my player pool. I'm coming over here. I'm setting rules, and then I'm building my lineups. And this is the build that I'm actually going to fill from. In this build, you could set up a contest sim here that uses base build as your field, right? That's kind of the point. The point is not about running a build against itself so that you can say that you did. It's saying the Saber Sim base build, the default build that you get when you just hit build, make no other changes, is actually a pretty decent, plausible field for what could happen. And we should incorporate it in our contest sim. And we should take advantage of that we have that at our disposal. So one of the areas that I think is actually kind of interesting to go next with this that I have been playing around with is if you have access to other projection systems, I think the idea of uploading a set of projections from a different model to SaberSim, then running the base build for that projection set and running another contest sim. So let's say you did that here and this was, I'm not going to name names, but this was, you know, competitor one base build. And you ran this here. Now you have another set of field lineups. And this time it's not what is the base Saber Sim, but this is the base of some other projection models kind of view of the slate. And now you're saying, you know, what if a bunch of people played that? Like, what if that was really representative of what the field actually did on the slate? Now you have another pool that does that. So that is something that I've been kind of exploring as well. The point of this is how efficiently can we come up with as many possible plausible fields as possible? That's kind of the idea here. There are 10 already preloaded into SaberSim for you. There is another one that is basically one button press of click build lineups away from just generating. And I think these are the next lowest hanging fruit here of what if somebody took this projection model and fired it up and built 150 and, you know, that was the portion of the field, right? What if somebody took this projection set, loaded it up, built 150 and it was that portion of the field, right? I think that's kind of the next low hanging fruit that's on my mind. I haven't actually done that yet. I haven't really actually experimented much with that, but I think that's kind of interesting too. So. John says, hypothetically speaking, would your pool be considered a custom field? How would you build a custom field? Yeah, it is. It is a custom field. Yeah. If you kind of think about like what that means, like when I think the only place in the app that you see the term custom field is right here. So if you go again into the contest tab, you open up the field lineups, you'll see this button that says create custom field. What this does when you actually click it is it takes these lineups and again, this time, because of some technical limitations at the moment, it's going to pull out 5,000 randomly sampled ones. And it's going to say like, okay, we've filled in this build here now with these 5,000 lineups. You could hypothetically make changes to these now. You could filter them by certain salary ranges. You could remove certain players. You could kind of create, you know, something from this set of players. So like a custom field, like if we think about literally what that means is you supplying the lineups to be used as the hypothetical field you're competing against in the contest. So in that way, the base build, the self sim, yeah, that is, I think, very literally a custom field. It is just one that is extremely easy to build. Custom fields are really hard to build. If you have ever actually tried to do that, to assemble a set of 25,000 lineups that actually resembles what people are likely to play in their DFS contests, that is a very hard problem to solve. You are answering a ton of questions at once. Like, what is the overall skill level of a field? How likely are they to do things like stack? What are their inputs? What projections is the field using? How reactive is the field to things like payout structure, to things like weather in baseball? Like you are accounting for an immense amount of information. It's very hard, but ripping a base build is not very hard. And it is a plausible enough idea of what the field might play. So such that it should be included in your contest sim set. So I saw another question here. I kind of wish I knew exactly what I was talking about when Chuck asked this. So Chuck, if you're still around and you maybe add a little color for me here on what would that be like a research build for contest sims? I think you're kind of referring to the base builds here. So this is a throwback. Research build is an old school Saber Sim-ism, predating contest sims completely, where we used to run builds on default settings or run very high sim diversity builds and compare our pool exposure to things like the ownership projection. It was kind of a way to try to find leverage spots before we had a contest sim that can find them more directly for us. So we would say things like, well, if in my pool, a player showing up in my pool 40% of the time, but he's only owned 30% of the time, that might be a player I want to get over the field on because he's showing up in more of our winning Saber Sim lineups than he is in the field lineups. That was kind of the idea of a research build. Is a base build with this system or is a self-sim like a research build? A little bit. It's almost actually the opposite, right? Where like the old research builds were ways to try to find leverage opportunities. This is almost like a way to mitigate the risk associated with exploiting leverage opportunities. It's saying if we're going to find leverage on a team tonight, if we're going to play a team because if we're going to play a team that has relatively low projections because they are under-owned by the field, we want to make sure that we are doing so in the safest way possible. I don't love the word safe there, but in the way that mitigates risk as much as possible for us, right? Like we want to make sure that we are playing lineups. I guess that is the right thing. If we're going to play the twin stacks tonight, we want to do so in a way that gives us still some room to breathe and be profitable if they're a little bit higher owned than we expected. So it's a little bit, it's almost a little the opposite of a research build in terms of its purpose, in terms of its like literal, the point. It is very similar in the research build in that it is kind of an experimental new way to use Saber Sim that isn't like that you're not going to find in the tutorial. But it is definitely different in what we're actually trying to accomplish with it. So I got to address this question. Pure Whips, I apologize that you asked this question as soon as the stream started. What is your process for main slates? Please tell me the best way to sort with sims and how to upload and sim against fields. And you asked that question as soon as the stream started, and then it's been 47 minutes of me going off the deep end talking about like advanced contest sim strategy. So I apologize for that. What I would actually recommend, so we don't just take a complete left turn here kind of abandon ship and talk about first principle stuff, is I would go to our YouTube channel watch. This playlist here is basically like a complete guide to how I recommend using Saber Sim to play Baseball DFS and to beat it. And in particular, this video, 5-step process to building a profitable MLB DFS lineup, that'll kind of show you how to build like build one good lineup on Saber Sim, and also just the how to beat MLB DFS in 2024. Those two videos, I think, really explain very well like the base process, that kind of the Saber Sim tutorial of how I recommend actually using it, like first principles. And then once you've seen those, this one, which is a 38-minute video of me literally building my lineups for an actual slate from 3 months ago and explaining everything I'm doing the entire step of the way. Those three videos are like the kind of crash course. There's also all this other stuff, you know, how to do weather, single entry strategy. There's a bunch of other videos that'll be useful tucked in here. Those three is kind of your crash course. So I want to make sure I'm answering some of these questions here that are coming in about what we've been talking about the whole time, but that's kind of the best place to start with the fundamentals there. So, let me, so there were a couple questions that popped up in the Discord server here. So let me, lost my, lost my page here. There it is. Sorry. Okay. Couldn't find the Office Hours channel. From Wise Guy here. Let's see. Do you think you could get good results adding different contest types from the All Contest tab, or is it better to use the 13 buckets for the contest you're playing? Okay. This is a great question. This is a good opportunity to talk about kind of another angle here. So I don't think you need to do that. And the reason why, right? There are three components that the contest sim is incorporating and synthesizing and solving for, right? There is the range of outcomes of players playing in the games, the baseball games. There is the ownership projections, the field you are likely to compete against. And there is the payout structure. And if you knew all three of those perfectly, if you knew exactly the lineups your opponents were going to play, if you had a perfect play-by-play game simulation and you knew the perfect payout structure, right, you could literally solve the game with a contest sim. It would just solve it. Well, the payout structure is the only thing in that list that we actually literally just know. The other two have quite a bit of variance associated with them, and it is not possible to have a perfect model. You are never actually going to know literally every lineup played in a contest before the slate locks. You also there's no such thing as a literally perfect play-by-play sim, right? No model is perfect in that way. But we know the payout structure. It is a fact. It cannot change. So when you are building your lineups and running your contest sims using the game simulations that power save your sim, you're accounting for the variance there. When you are setting up these different field lineups of different contest sims, you are accounting for the natural variance of the field. But I don't think you don't need to account for variance of the payout structure because it does not change. So really the question, the question of what Wise Guy is asking here is, should we actually go into this contest tab here and go in and create all of these different contest sims like this, right? Right click, add contest sim, add contest sim, add contest sim. All that's really going to do is create a bunch of different contests. You're going to create all these different contest sims designed for these different contests here, but you're going to introduce this like variance of the payout structure in a way that doesn't actually help you, because the payout structure of the contest you're playing is the payout structure of the contest you're playing. It doesn't change. So if this is the actual contest you're playing, 12.5% of the pots go into first place when the contest ends. So you can just say that. You don't need to account for variance there. So would get very interesting if there was variance there, right? But that's not how DFS works. I know some poker, online poker stuff back in the day had contests that were a little bit more structured like that, where there was, depending on how much a contest would not be capped at how many entrants it could fill. And the payout structure could potentially change based on different thresholds of players in the contest reached. But that's not the case for DFS. It's always static on the payout structure side. So good question though. Okay. All right. We are approaching the hour mark here. Are there other questions here for me today? And we don't literally need to talk about this the entire time. If there's other stuff that people had questions on to bring to today's show, that's fine. For Pure Whip's question, I don't really have the time at this point to go through a full walkthrough of my baseball process, but those other videos on the YouTube channel should help there. But any other questions? Anything else? This was a fun one. This has gone extremely fast. 54 minutes has flown by. If you can't tell, I'm very excited about this. I've had quite a bit of fun walking through this, doing this here, playing around. Now that I've kind of talking about this on a stream, and I'm presumably a bunch of people are going to try this here tonight or on their next slate. I do want to give two caveats here before we kind of wrap up here. Two things to be careful of. The first and the big one is, if you are playing a sport where duplication is really important, be very, very careful of the base build or the self-sim process, because you will not have duplicates in that. So if you are building lineups on SaberSim in a build, right? So like this base build, there are no duplicates here in this set of 5,000. So if it is important to know how many times a lineup is duplicated, it's not going to account for that. So I'm talking MMA, NASCAR, tennis, showdowns. I think you can still create all the contest sims for all the other buckets because all of these buckets will account for duplication. This one won't. So you want to be very cautious of that. Be very cautious there. So if it's a dupes are important sport, I would be cautious of the self sim. The second one, and I already kind of mentioned this, there's actually three caveats here. The second one, I already kind of mentioned this, is if you are the type of player to make a lot of adjustments to craft your build, and maybe you're hitting rebuild lineups a few times, you're making a lot of changes up front, you don't really want to run that build against itself, because at that point, your build is no longer a plausible field for what the field might do. It's a plausible set of lineups that you might like to play, but it's not a plausible field of what the field might do. So again, the point is not running builds against themselves in a vacuum just to say you did. It's taking advantage of the fact that you can come up with a very quick and easy plausible field of what the field might do just by creating a basic build on SaberSim. And the third and final caveat here is, and I mentioned this already again as well, that like to remember that there is a seesawing effect here. There's a feedback loop of what actually happens in terms of how ownership actually tends to shake out. And that I think part of the reason that this strategy is effective right now is because sim systems are often identifying the same leverage spot. So the leverage spots vanish when the cards get flipped over because they're fragile. They're extremely high leverage spots when a certain condition is met with ownership. A stack is 1% owned. They fall apart when the stack is 4% owned. And because the stack might be projected 1% owned across the industry, they come in 4% owned and the leverage collapses. Well, this strategy, exactly as I've outlined it here, is a way to play in a more balanced way. But it might actually give up some ROI. It might leave some EV on the table if those leverage spots do actually end up existing, because nobody bothered to try to take them. So part of the idea of a more balanced approach to your portfolio when you're playing DFS is that you are less likely to get burned by that. And I think this strategy does make you a little more balanced. So you are a little less fragile on either side to those kinds of things. It's very possible, like if you go in and if a bunch of people kind of start playing in this way and you go in and check Flashback the next day and you realize that there are a bunch of players that had a way higher sim ROI than you did and you're asking why, and you go and look at their lineups and they're very overexposed to the Twins or the Rockies or something like that that nobody played, that's why. It's because everybody kind of played in a balanced way and the leverage spot existed. So that's kind of the third caveat there. So to just be aware that like this is, again, I want to be very clear that this is not like, this is very, in this point in time, something that I think can be effective. Chuck says, Matt hinted a couple weeks ago about introducing a portfolio optimization tool in the app. Did he now? Interesting. I find that very, very interesting. Next question. Mikey said, you said Chris differed on what you sorted by. What did he sort by? I think we both kind of like the self-sim sort, but he does do a little bit of different things with the way that he kind of thinks about his filtering. And honestly, Chris has just a very interesting perspective on the value of this, and one that is a little bit different than I do. I don't want to give up too much about specifically what Chris and Matt said on those two pro videos, because again, it is pro content. The pro and the ultimate customers are paying for that content. And I think I'm happy to come on the office hour stream and give my takes about all of this and talk openly. But in terms of like what those guys are thinking and the things that they're doing in those process, those two videos were intended to be interviews of Matt and Chris and their processes respectively. So I would go listen to those there if you want to hear their takes and opinions on them. in a little more detail there, because there's a lot of awesome stuff there. I think it will just build your understanding about all of this stuff. You're listening to two other very sharp DFS players talk about how they're thinking about it. So Matt also brings an interesting perspective too. We talked a lot more about Showdown in the video I did with Matt, and he also plays a lot of kind of higher stakes single entry kind of stuff. So I think he has some interesting ideas for those types of contests specifically of what this can give you. So, cool. Yeah, let's see. Any other questions here? It looks like we're about caught up. I know who was asking me about that. Jay Sick Hemi. I'll take a look at your verification as soon as we hop off. I assume that the Discord bot just needs to run. So if you've done the upgrade, if you've upgraded to Pro or Ultimate, the Discord bot probably just needs to run, but I can make it run too as soon as we hop off. So cool. Any other final thoughts here? We'll give it a couple more minutes. Go a little long today because we're having fun here. Any other final thoughts? Any other final questions on any of this stuff here before we get out of here? There will not be an office hour show tomorrow on Saturday. Andrew normally does the kind of Saturday matinee show at like 11 a.m. Eastern. He's out. I won't be able to do that show tomorrow. So we'll be back on Monday. And I think if I remember correctly, I'm doing the Monday show as well. So if you play around with this, mess around with some of this process stuff here over the weekend in your DFS contests, come back. You have questions for me on Monday. That is, that's great. That's perfect. I might need to mess around with this a little bit here this weekend as well. Is there a MMA card this weekend? I think there is. That has quickly become one of my more favorite. Yeah, there is. I wonder if this is, I don't follow MMA closely enough to know some of this, but I'm curious if this looks like a pay-per-view based on some of the names I'm seeing here. Does anybody know if this is a pay-per-view? I guess I could just look that up. It probably is, right? If Alex Pereira is on here, mispronouncing his name horribly. Yeah. Okay. This is awesome. Well, I'm definitely going to play this. Looks like fun. Oh yeah, this was supposed to be the McGregor one. Cool. Yeah, nice. I will probably be playing this. MMA has become one of my favorite DFS sports, especially the pay-per-views. I don't get to every slate, but I really like the pay-per-views. Speaking of, really cool video on our YouTube channel, and then we'll get out of here. So last call on questions. On our YouTube channel, we did a very cool video recently with Dr. 2-Inch. Who just won the DraftKings MMA Live Final for $250,000 earlier this summer here. Did an interview with him, getting his insights on like what he's thinking about building lineups, how he's using the simulations, process stuff, also some like contest selection stuff about his story of how he built his bankroll up, how he selected contests and ultimately got the ticket to play this tournament, and then how he... Oh, you guys can't see, man. I just realized that you guys can't see this tab. Actually, I'm just realizing now that you never could see my YouTube tab, which means that question I answered before of talking about what MLB videos are helpful, you guys are just looking at SaberSim. So I will also pull the MLB playlist back up and explain those. But this video, interviewing Dr. 2-Inch, just really insightful stuff. He's a really sharp guy. It was really interesting to talk to him. I think there were things that I learned from this video that I've taken in my MMA stuff. So if you play MMA, even if you don't play MMA, there's like, he plays a bunch of other sports as well. We talked about some other sports strategy as well, but I'd definitely check this video out. I think this was really cool. We'd like to do more of this kind of content when people use SaberSim for really big wins. We've done it a little bit for the Millie Maker wins last year, wanted to do it a little bit for this video. So I think it's really cool to just like talk to people about how they're using SaberSim, having a lot of success with it. So that's a cool video. If you're planning on playing MMA, carve out some time for that. I did want to come back as well to talk about this playlist, because now that I'm realizing when I was showing this off on my screen before, you guys couldn't see it. This is the baseball playlist. So going back to that first question that came in at the start of the stream, this is like the crash course of baseball for this season. Every video I've made on baseball for this year. The three that I would watch first, if you really just want to get like started on what do I do? how to beat MLB DFS in 2024 is like the fundamentals. The 5-step process to building a profitable MLB DFS lineup in 2024 is really useful. That's particularly useful if you like single entry, if you just like playing a couple lineups. It's a very useful one. And then this one, crush MLB DFS like a daily fantasy baseball pro. That is 38 minutes. I said it before, 38 minutes, 38 seconds of me step-by-step building for a slate that happened early in the season, explaining everything I do along the way. So any of these videos are good, but those are the three that I would call out of like, you should watch these first because that'll really get you a good head start. So I apologize before. And you all are very kind that nobody yelled at me in chat and said, we can't see what you're talking about. We're just looking at Saber Sim, but, hopefully that helps. So, okay. We're going to call it there. This was a lot of fun. This is a good stream. Thank you everybody for hanging out with me the past hour. Hopefully you got something out of this and you learned something and maybe have something to try in your DFS processes in the next couple of slates. I hope that I didn't horribly confuse anybody, any poor soul that wandered in here as their first office hours ever. And it's like, what is going on? Because I think this was definitely the kind of content today where that could have happened, but we needed to address some of the questions that have come up from the pro videos we did this past week, because there have been some questions. So hopefully if you watch those pro videos, if you've been experimenting with some of this stuff, you feel a little more confident than you did when you came in here. And if you haven't, that's what you should watch next. Go get on a trial. Actually, yeah, even better. Go get on a 5-day trial for pro or ultimate. Actually, probably for ultimate, so you can use the contest sims. And go watch those two videos, the one with Chris, the one with Matt, while you're on the trial. You'll get access to them for that period of time because it's really good content. Really, really cool stuff. It was fun talking to those guys. So otherwise, have a good weekend. Thank you again for everybody that was hanging out with me here for this last hour. I will be back on office hours on Monday. In the meantime, we'll see you then. Good luck. And yeah, that'll do it.